Welcome to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos. Now, here's your host, Tom Temin.
Jay Johnson thought he was done with public service after leaving the Pentagon as general counsel in 2012. By late 2013, he was back as President Barack Obama's Secretary of Homeland Security. In part one of my interview, Johnson points out that much of his legal work at DOD was directed at the legal framework to enable overseas counterterrorism activity. By contrast,
at DHS, we're pretty much on defense, protecting the homeland, guarding the ports of entry, guarding the border, guarding aviation security, guarding maritime security. I had sat across the table in the Situation Room at the White House for 4 years from a DHS representative, had become familiar with the department that way, and of course as a member of the general public. When I got to DHS, one of the things that struck me was how stovepiped the department was. Even after 11, 12 years, the components reported directly to the secretary, made budget submissions directly to the secretary without regard to the broader mission.
And that's a lot of direct reports from a simple administrative standpoint.
You know, it's interesting. My first holiday season as secretary, I decided to send an email to all my direct reports to wish them happy Thanksgiving or Merry Christmas, whatever it was. And I just kept going and going and going on the two line, realizing that I had a lot of direct reports. And during the Senate confirmation process, the senators talked to me a lot about the need for management reform of the department. And they were actually right. That was a good primer for what I was about to step into. And so we launched something called our Unity of Effort Initiative to more effectively coordinate the department's activities, how it thought about itself, how it planned, how it engaged in acquisition, budget submissions. And that was much of the focus of mine in the 3 years I was in office, simply getting the department to function better, more effectively, and more efficiently for the American people.
Did you coin the phrase unity of effort?
We did, yes. And it kind of stuck. It resonated throughout the department and I think in the components. Part of the Unity of Effort initiative also was raising morale. And I was very pleased that in the FEV survey last year, the department as a whole went up 3 percentage points, which for a department that large, with that many components, was frankly no small achievement. And I give our leadership at the middle level and at the more junior levels a lot of credit for really taking hold of this issue and focusing on it.
Yeah, because 3% in Homeland Security is thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
Correct. There are 230,000 people in the department. And so some components went up more than 3%. Our immigration components went up significantly last year, for example. But getting that across-the-board increase in such a large place, I think, was quite an achievement. I was determined to do it if it killed me, and I was pleased that in my last year of office we were able to get the score up. And that progress continues. As I understand it, this year the department went up another 4 percentage points, which is a good thing.
We're speaking with Jay Johnson, former Secretary of Homeland Security, and you mentioned some of the stovepipe functions like procurement and information technology, which are somewhat related. It seems like those are areas that you went after pretty vigorously and had some good CIOs in place and some good management people in place in that area. Tell us more about IT and procurement.
This was an area where I wanted to encourage our components to more effectively utilize what we had available at the headquarters DHS level. So, for example, we encouraged the Secret Service to more effectively rely on our S&T directorate for technological advances, for investments in technology, rather than focus inward and do it all by themselves. Similarly, with border technology, with cyber technology, we encouraged the components to utilize what we had available at the department level, and that's really how it should function, how it should run. So we had some good people. When I came into office, there were frankly a shocking number of vacancies at senior levels of the department. Within about 9 months working with the White House, we pretty much filled them all. And though I didn't advertise it at the time, I didn't much care whether the person I was bringing in was a Republican or a Democrat. I just wanted somebody who was capable, who was dedicated to the department's mission, and was dedicated to, as I was, leaving the Department of Homeland Security better than we found it.
What was the selling proposition to get people to come in? Because if there are a large number of vacancies and they don't have great engagement scores for the employees there, it seems to indicate that wasn't a place people wanted to go work.
Well, people are willing to serve their country, take on a challenging mission, if they know that they can make a difference. And two people that come to mind are individuals who I knew for a long, long time. Frank Taylor, who was a retired Air Force general, used to be head of Air Force OSI, and he was State Department in the Bush administration, head of diplomatic security, ambassador at large for counterterrorism. I asked Frank if he would come out of retirement to be undersecretary for intelligence and analysis. I have no idea what Frank's political affiliation or persuasion is, but he's a patriot and a good public servant and agreed to do it. Similarly, Russ Dio, a retired Johnson & Johnson executive, he was my client when I was in law practice, in private law practice in New York. I represented Johnson & Johnson for a number of years. I asked Russ if he would come out of retirement and become our undersecretary for management. In many ways, DHS resembles Johnson & Johnson. It is a very large, decentralized organization with operational components, just like J&J. And I wanted Russ to come in and help us with our management reforms. I have no idea what Russ's political affiliation is or was, but he came in, he agreed to do it, serve his country, live here in Washington for a couple of years, and did a very effective job. And those are the kinds of people I wanted in DHS to help us with our mission, irrespective of their politics.
Now, with respect to getting the department to operate as one, you had a very large cadre of senior executive service members, career senior executives in the different areas, and FEMA and Coast Guard and so forth. And functionally, they have to come together when there's a disaster, for example. How did you get the unity of effort pushed down to that level, to the people that are...
Constant messaging, constant communication with our component leadership to filter down the message about unity of effort. And I spent a lot of time directly with our SES workforce. The SES crew really do, in a lot of ways, run the federal government. They are the super bureaucrats. They've been there for years. They are extraordinarily capable. You don't get to be an SES unless you are an extraordinarily capable person with a lot of experience. And I met some really fantastic ones. And I endeavored to make no key decision without consulting not only the political appointees, but also those at the senior-most level of the career bureaucracy, the SES level people, who were very often the number two or three in one of the components like ICE or CBP or CIS. And I wanted to hear their views on not just whether the policy direction we were going in was right, but how we would go about implementing this and how the workforce would respond. And they're almost always right. And they know how to respond to a change in administration, a change in direction, and implement the new administration's policy directions. So I can't say enough good things about the SES level workforce.
They do tend to be very fierce about devotion to their mission. And I remember an incident very early on in the formation of Homeland Security. This was during, you know, the George W. Bush administration, right after 9/11, a couple of years later. And the people at FEMA were upset because there was a gambit to take away FEMA.gov from their email and substitute DHS.gov. Mm. I think today it's still the components all have their own email. I guess that illustrates the difficulty of getting the SESers and the general workforce to think of themselves as part of something much larger and collaborate. So how do you overcome that dichotomy?
Last year, we developed a mission statement for DHS, one-sentence mission statement. With honor and integrity, we will safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. And as far as I know, that mission statement is still around. It endures. It was meant to be totally apolitical, and people really did embrace it, and we used the words that we heard from the workforce. And so that's a long way of saying it's less important to me that we all have the same email address. But if we all are pulling in the same direction, if we all understand the wider mission, we all plan, budget, make acquisitions with that in mind, and understand the overarching mission, then I think we're doing the best for the American people and the American taxpayers.
That's Jay Johnson, former Secretary of Homeland Security, now a partner at the law firm Paul, Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton, and Garrison. In part two of the interview, Johnson goes more deeply into what unity of effort got done and what was still left. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
When, as Secretary of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson visited the southern border during a sudden spike in illegal immigration, he realized why his Unity of Effort program was needed. In part two of my interview, part of our ongoing look at DHS at 15, Johnson also describes the ongoing maturation of federal emergency response.
During the spike in illegal migration in the summer of 2014 from Central America, when I'd go down to South Texas, I'd meet with Border Patrol, Air and Marine, Immigration Enforcement, Citizenship and Immigration Services, possibly Coast Guard, and FEMA to talk about how we were going to address the problem. The only person that all those different people from all those different agencies had in common in their command structure was me. So it would be like trying to fight a war in Afghanistan or Iraq when you have Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and the only person in common is the Secretary of Defense, and they're all stovepiped. And so, modeled on what we already had in Arizona, we built these joint task forces in the Southeast and the Southwest dedicated to border security, where we had a task force director responsible for all the DHS assets in that part of the country, modeled also after the combatant command structure that I was acquainted with in the Department of Defense. We got people in those positions who are very dedicated to standing it up.
And some of them might have been former military to start with.
Well, we had a Border Patrol 3-star in the Southwest. We had a Coast Guard 3-star in the Southeast, because Southeast is mostly water, Southwest is mostly land. And it worked pretty well. And I'm pleased that just before I left office, we got Congress to codify it into law so that it endures, pouring cement over it, as the bureaucrats like to say. And it had bipartisan support, and I think we need to do more of that kind of thing.
I wanted to get back to that whole summer of 14, if you will, when there was this huge surge of immigrants, and it was really seemed like a dangerous time for the country, and it seemed as if Homeland Security operatives in that region were almost overwhelmed and had to call in even private sector help and set up shelters for thousands of children and so forth. What did that look like, and how did it feel from the headquarters standpoint? How much of your time did all that occupy?
A lot. I was at headquarters, but during that summer, I probably made 5-6 trips there myself to South Texas, to Arizona, to see it myself, and so that I had a real on-the-ground feel for it. It's important to look at the broader picture. Illegal migration on our southern border is a fraction of what it used to be. The high was 17 years ago, FY 2000, when it was 1.6 million in 1 year apprehensions. Apprehensions are an indicator of total attempts to cross the border. In FY 14, the number was 479,000, 480,000 with that spike. The following year, FY15, which was my second year in office, it was the second lowest number since the 1970s. The number is a fraction of what it used to be, in whether you're talking about 14, 15, 16, or current year. It's a fraction of what it used to be 16 years ago. What is different, however, is the demographic. No longer single adults from Mexico. What we saw in 14, though it was a fraction of what it used to be, were women and kids coming from Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras. And that was the challenge, because we were not equipped to deal with women and children, and we did not have detention space for women and children, for families. And so, therefore, you saw the tents, you saw the detention facilities flooded, the border patrol facilities, holding stations flooded with people.
It almost became as much a humanitarian effort as a law enforcement border protection effort.
Absolutely. And a lot of them asserted claims for asylum. I spent hours talking to the kids, asking them, you know, why did you come here? And illegal migration, and we've seen this year in the Trump administration, illegal migration is a very market-sensitive phenomenon. They're all up here because they've been smuggled here and they've been sold something by the smugglers, the coyotes, who are saying, come now, you know, before it's too late. It's like, you know, trying to sell a car on sale before the end of the week. And they respond to information in the marketplace about perceived changes in immigration policy. And so the numbers in late summer of 14 went down dramatically because we announced that we were expanding our detention capability. That was somewhat controversial, but we announced it, and I kind of made a big deal out of it. I went there myself to announce the opening of one of these facilities. The Mexican government really stepped up on their southern border as well. And so by July, August, the number had gone down very significantly. But the larger lesson from that experience was a lot of these people expect to get caught. They expect to get apprehended. And so you can add more border security. You can build a wall. You can spend billions building a wall. But at the end of the day, to deal most effectively with illegal migration, you've got to address the push factors, the conditions in these places where these people are leaving. And what we hear over and over again from families, from kids, is my mother sent me here because I was going to be killed by the gangs. And they'd rather risk the dangers of the journey than stay where they were living at the time. So you've really got to address the underlying situation that prompted them to leave in the first place.
That's Jay Johnson, former Secretary of Homeland Security, now a partner at the law firm Paul, Weiss, Rifkin, Wharton & Garrison. I'm Tom Temin.
For 15 years, Leidos has seen firsthand the Department of Homeland Security's men and women safeguard the American people, our homeland, and our values. In support of the DHS mission, our technical experts have delivered trusted solutions in mission-based IT, cybersecurity, biometrics, and logistics. Ranked number one on Washington Technology's top 100, Leidos has the experience DHS can count on, and we're ready for your future missions. Learn more at Leidos.com/homeland.
We're speaking with former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson. And let's shift gears for a moment to disaster response. Now, Hurricane Sandy happened before your watch, although you lived in the area where it struck.
Yes.
By the time you were Homeland Security Secretary, how had disaster response matured?
FEMA has come a long way since Katrina in 2005, and I give a lot of credit to Craig Fugate for that. Craig really did build FEMA into a first-rate operation. When I would go to disaster recovery situations, whether it was Washington State, Arkansas, Louisiana, South Carolina, Texas, people would tell me, this is what the federal government does best, the ability to mobilize assets, respond quickly. And I think FEMA is still pretty much on that path. FEMA is in a much better place than it used to be. But it is a collective effort. You know, the federal government, volunteers, people at the state level, it is a collective effort. But I think we do a pretty good job. Now, there are a lot of people, you know, who are desperate, in desperate situations when you go to these places. But we've come a long way from where we used to be.
And let's talk about transition for a minute. Any discussions you might have had with General Kelly before he came in?
First, it has to be mentioned that during a transition, most of the federal civilian workforce, most of the military, go on with their mission and their job day to day without any interaction with people at the political level who are transitioning in, transitioning out. They continue in their mission day to day to day and continue to do a fine job. When I came in, Janet Napolitano had already left to run the University of California system. So I did not have much interaction.
You didn't pass in the doors going in and out.
Correct. We spoke on the phone a couple of times. John Kelly is a good friend of mine. I got to know him when he was the military assistant to the Secretary of Defense, and I was the general counsel at the Department of Defense. And so we spoke before he took the job. I knew I wasn't going to be able to talk him out of it because he's a man dedicated to the mission. He's a patriot. And so there was no sense trying to talk him out of the job. I told him it was an extraordinarily difficult job. I think he knew that, and he took it anyway. During the transition, he came in on a Saturday. We sat down one and one, and I told him everything I thought he needed to know from the perspective of the outgoing secretary. And I knew that there were going to be enough people around after I left who could explain to him the reasons for certain decisions, how the place runs without me.
Did you like being Homeland Security Secretary?
It was the experience of a lifetime. It's a very difficult job, but if you asked me to do it all over again, I would do it all over again. If you could make me 4 years younger, all over again. It was the experience of a lifetime. And one of the things I miss about the job, though I very much enjoy being a private citizen again, is working with the people. Working with the people dedicated to the mission, dedicated to Homeland Security, who work very hard night and day to prevent bad things from happening, though you don't always hear about it. And so anyone who works for DHS who happens to be listening to this, please know that I miss working with you, and I salute you for all the good things that you do.
That's former Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson. There's more to the interview. We'll post it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency in Focus, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Leidos, on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search DHS 15.